Welcome to TSW Comics,
a monthly look between the covers of Marvel's Star Wars comic book series.
Hello everyone, welcome back to TSW Comics, issue number 3. I'm Mark.
And I'm Rob Cast.
And we've already had a 10-minute discussion, so we are done.
Yes.
See you next month.
Well, I think with us, because it's so hard scheduling, me being in Canada and you in the UK, and then it's like, oh, well, we speak on to each other on Twitter all the time and on our Facebook VIP group, but to actually, have a quick conversation, we don't.
Yeah. I found myself just starting to launch into things that I've been buying comic book wise,
yes.
And I thought, this is all material for the show.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Let's not burn it here. It's got the best place possible in a little introduction. And what I was about to say to you before we started recording, Rob, was I've just picked up a whole bunch of Dr. Aphra comic books because I'd read the first issue and I'd let it slide because we were focusing on Maul and then the Darth Vader book for this podcast.
Right.
But I did pick up issue 2 through 5 of Dr. Aphra for 78 pence each digitally on Amazon. So there's some amazing deals there at the moment. If you go to talkstarwars.co.uk/books and click on the banner that takes you to the new Star Wars books, you can find a whole bunch of stuff at extremely reduced prices. Like the whole Lando run is just over £3.
Oh, well, yeah, I've said this before on the show, the Lando run for that price, pick it up. Don't even hesitate. Same thing with Dr. Aphra. The first 5 issues, absolutely pick it up. For sure, you literally can't lose.
Well, I saw the volume 1 collection sitting in there, and it was about £6, and I thought, well, I was just going to go and pick them all up anyway and get myself caught up. So I was just about to pull the trigger on that, and then at the bottom of the page where it says recommended purchases, it had, I think, number 2 was 78p. Right. So I thought, I'll have a look, and then I went through and I just picked them all up, and it's next to nothing. For a huge stack of comic books now, but I do have to sort of cram in some reading because I have fallen behind a little bit. But
unlike a lot of our listeners, I know, you don't, when you go to work, you don't commute on a train or on a city bus or it's not like you can have your iPad sitting on your dashboard while you're driving.
No, I'm usually busy recording a podcast whilst I'm driving, which I shouldn't even be doing that, but. Yeah, it's just me talking. You know, actually reading at the same time would probably be pushing things just a little bit.
Yes.
So how's your past month of comic book collecting? I've seen your tweets about your pulls is getting some response. We got one later in the show.
Yeah, my comic, I've been happy. I've had to scale back a little bit. For the DC universe, has anything to do with the Star Wars Marvel run, but I scaled back a few of my DC titles just because, not that they weren't okay, it was just they were just starting to, I'm retreading, I'm getting a lot of similar themes in each book, so I just want to stick with my Superman, Batman, Action Comics, DC Comics, The Flash, the main titles, but all the offshoot titles Justice League and Supergirl and Batgirl and Nightwing, I've actually passed those on. I have a 13-year-old daughter, so I said, do you want these? And if you want me to still keep pulling the run, I'll keep pulling it, and let me know if you want me to stop it, then I'll stop it. So that way she'll get enjoyment out of it, and hopefully she can, pass it along and have other people enjoy them.
I think there's going to be, next year, there's going to be a new DC title that you might be interested in. We'll get to that in a little bit. Teasers. Skillfully placed teasers. Let's just look at a couple of bits of news, shall we? There's a bit that came out this morning that I'm quite keen to get to. But before we jump on that, did you see Tim's post about the Captain Phasma comic book?
Yes.
There was a look at some of the art in there. I don't think the art had any dialogue boxes on it, so it's not giving away anything. It's spoiler free. Mm-hmm. But if you head to talkstarwars.co.uk/books, you can see Tim's articles in there alongside Rob's pull list reviews.
Yes.
But this is just covering the new Captain Phasma book, and there's a little bit, I just pulled some text out of Tim's post where he just gives credit to the writer. So the duo of writer Kelly Thompson from Hawkeye and the Star Wars Annual, and Marco Cicchetto, the artist from Shattered Empire and the Screaming Citadel, which we were talking about off air, which we won't be talking about on air, bring us a story of how the chrome-clad Stormtrooper escaped from the trash compactor in the final moments before the destruction of Starkiller Base. So the miniseries will more than likely lead into her appearance in The Last Jedi. So like the Road to the Last Jedi storylines. And isn't there a book? Isn't there a Captain Phasma book as well, I think?
I think it's on the way.
Yeah, so there's...
It's not out.
They're really making an effort now to sort of bolster this character after she sort of fell a bit flat.
Well, also, too, I think it's... You know, Star Wars doesn't like showing their hand, and but we know Captain Phasma, because of the casting, is in The Last Jedi. We know that without a shadow of a doubt. So they almost have carte blanche. They say, okay, the Star Wars fan knows she's in the movie. We can actually just go ahead and do the comic. We can do the book. We can, you know, like, there's no surprise. That's like, oh, she escaped Starkiller Base. Well, of course she did. She's in the next movie. We know this.
Yeah.
So.
And as long as they leave her in a certain place, the film can pick up and they're free to do whatever they want creatively, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's not like we're going to be watching the movie in December and we're going to get this big reveal where she comes out with a dinged up, armor. I'm like, oh my God, she's alive. I didn't know she was cast in this movie. They didn't say anything. It's, you know, we know. So there's no surprises. So yeah, let's get into this character. They've created something really new and exciting for Star Wars fans. I know whenever you see a pop vinyl or an action figure or anything out there for Captain Phasma, people snatch it up immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, she was a big hit. I think a lot of people felt a little bit let down by how little they explored her in TFA, but it's time to put that right now.
Yeah, but I think that's the same thing. Remember Jimmy Smits in the prequels?
Yeah.
He wanted to be part of Star Wars, and George Lucas said, yeah, you can be in. Don't worry. I know your part is small, but when we get to the end, we're going to need you. So it's almost like, don't feel slighted. Because you don't have a huge role, because you have, in this little part, but in the overall arc, you're very much needed.
Yeah, it's a bit of a slow burn with a lot of stuff in Star Wars, isn't it? Look at Boba Fett and how that minuscule appearance in Empire built kind of a business unto itself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe she's going to be our new Boba Fett.
Maybe.
Second bit of Star Wars news this month is about this Star Wars Adventures All Ages comic book coming from IDW. I literally hadn't heard anything about this until I started to put together the show notes for this episode. Had you heard of this?
No, it completely fell off my radar until I saw the show notes and started getting ready for this show. I don't know, IDW, Marvel, like they're kind of working together, I guess, or letting some of their characters, because traditionally, obviously, comic book companies don't crossover.
No, of course.
You know, they have their properties, but I think with Marvel, with some of their lesser titles, they don't mind leading on IDW a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, this is an unusual approach. I've seen somebody out where you can actually download this preview. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. So in the description to this episode, you'll be able to click in and download the PDF of this book now. But it's coming out, it's going to debut at San Diego Comic-Con, so in just a couple of weeks' time, or next week by the time this comes out to the public. But there's this thing called the Ashcan Preview, which is written by Landry Q. Walker, who I'm informed will later go on to write for the series. And it's illustrated by who will be the series regular artist, Derek Charm. And it's a preview of it's what they're referring to as a charming introduction to Star Wars Adventures, where C-3PO and R2 address the reader. So a bit of a Deadpool without the swears, fourth wall breaking. They bicker, they tell short stories of Star Wars Adventures. See, we get to see a very young Luke Skywalker getting into trouble on Tatooine, young Anakin fleeing with some important parts for a personal project and more. So whatever that is, it might be the construction of C-3PO. So you can download that and read that now, or if you're at San Diego Comic-Con, you'll be able to pick that up in floppy form.
Do you think this is like a for the little guys out there getting into Star Wars, for it's the Forces of Destiny equivalent, but in comic form?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. I think that's the thing. I think that we're seeing this blanket bomb across the entire audience, aren't we? We're seeing all these youngsters being appealed to, kids that probably don't haven't seen the movies. They don't know what the movies are unless they're coming in easy with these books. And just imagine the adventure they're going to have now piecing all of this stuff together.
Well, we can speak from experience because we're what I like to call the projected generation, where we actually saw Star Wars on the big screen when it first came out. We were very young, but look how it hooked us. And look how much money they've reaped from both of us over the last 40 years.
Yeah. I'm just looking up now at my shelf, which contains
large collection of Black Series. I thought you had a spreadsheet of all the numbers. I'm like, don't tell me that.
Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't keep any printable records of that. That's not going to happen. It's the first step down the path to Star Wars fandom now, this. It looks like this is all ages and across the board for young boys and girls. Forces of Destiny is out there. I think it's directly aimed at a younger age group. It's very female skewed, so it's inclusive of little girls. So they get they get the same sort of heroes to idolise that we had when we were kids, like you say, during our run at the projected releases of these movies. So it's great stuff. I'm definitely going to have a look at this, flick through it, and perhaps we can discuss it a little bit more in next month's episode, issue of the podcast. But we have a special treat this month, which considering, you know, these monthly podcasts we're doing, initially they were designed to be 30-minute shows that we could just sort of knock out really quickly and just cover a couple of little areas of fandom that don't seep into the main show. And this month's, the last episode of The Toy Box was close to 2 hours long.
Okay. And
I think we're probably going to be pulling some numbers on today's episode because we have our own interview to run now. Yesterday I got to speak to Star Wars Legacy 2 writer Karina Becko, who was an absolute delight. And I wanted to ask her a few questions about her experience of writing Star Wars, a Star Wars fandom, how she came into the fold and what she's doing next. So here is my conversation with Karina now, and we will see you on the other side. Karina Becko, welcome to TSW Comics. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to finally get to chat to you. I just wanted to set things up, set the stage for obviously we've got a Star Wars podcast, set the stage for the Star Wars fans who will probably be most familiar with your work from Star Wars Legacy 2. Would that,
yes.
Is that right? Do you think that's how most people will know you?
I think so. I do. I've done other sporadic work. You know, I've worked for most of the companies, but that was a big one. And we worked on it we had a pretty good long run on there until the license went away from Dark Horse. So
was that how that ended, the license moving from Dark Horse back to Marvel?
Yeah, exactly. We were kind of in the middle of a run, but luckily they gave us a bit of warning, so we were able to wrap up the arc that we were doing and bring it to what I hope was a satisfying conclusion. But yeah, we had a bit more to say there, but you know, you can't, it's not your own property, and when you work on somebody else's universe, you have to let that flow and let it go.
I'm sure, yeah, that's a good logo. It's almost a t-shirt, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
So can you tell us, can you just bring people up to speed with the actual concept of Legacy 2?
I felt like we were really lucky with this because basically they said they wanted all new characters, all new things. So we were the farthest in the future. Like, if you're familiar, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with how large and encompassing the universe of Star Wars
Indeed.
Was, especially about the novels and everything. So they wanted something set not between the movies, not close to the movies, but as far forward as possible. So our main character, they just said, we want her to be a Solo, and that we want her to be a woman. And we want her to go places that others have not gone. And we went, great, we get to make up everything. And we weren't as bound to continuity strictures as people that, say, have to tell a story within, you know, a time frame of a couple of weeks between one thing happening and another thing happening that had already been set up. So we were very free, which was wonderful, because we wanted to make it feel as much like Star Wars as we possibly could, have all of the stuff, you know, make it just feel like that feeling that watching the movies always gave me, but do it in a new way. So this was, I mean, to me, this was Star Wars, you know, paradise.
Yeah. And this is the character of Anya Solo, is it? And she's, granddaughter of Hanalei?
You know what's funny is we know this, but we were never allowed to tell. And when the license went to Disney, we thought, well, surely we can now say what we thought. And they said, nope.
Really? They shut that down?
Yeah. So I don't know if that means sometime in the future someone is going to tell that story, come back to it. I don't really see how. But yeah, we are still not allowed to say the exact way that works.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering, you were saying they, you know, the creatives, was that the story group as we recognize them now? Is that Kiri Hart and Pablo? Is it the story group at Lucasfilm that was overseeing your book?
I imagine, yes. I mean, we got all of this through our wonderful editor was Randy Stradley. I'm sure a lot of fans know him because he wrote a lot of books at Dark Horse as well. And he is such a wonderful shepherd for this stuff. But basically, if he would even intimate, like, don't go this direction, or this is the wrong ship, or don't tell that story, we would just go, okay. Because obviously he's the man. He knows what's going on. And so I'm not sure where that stricture came from originally. But, you know, editor says it. That's what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting you're saying that this is the wrong ship. That's the sort of thing that we Star Wars fans zero in on.
Oh, yeah.
You can get everything else now nailed down perfectly, but the second you step out of line on a minute little detail like that, and we'll find it.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing working with Randy for that, because he knows everything. Like, he is such a huge fan, but also he's just a really, he really took it seriously. So, you know, you're writing, you can just kind of get into it and go, okay, yeah, this would be easier. And Randy, no, it cannot be this kind of ship. This kind of ship could not be this kind of class, blah, 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 or whatever it happened to be, this technology. And he knew exactly the little pitfalls that, you know, I mean, you can read everything and still not recognize some of the technological pitfalls or whatever. So he really helped make everything feel cohesive, I think.
So that storyline, I mean, one of those important elements is the lightsaber, Anya's lightsaber. And you're 138 years past the first movie at this point, right? Past the Yavin, the Battle of the Yavin. So the lightsaber and everything, all of that stuff is absolutely traditional, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we really wanted to, I mean, both Gabriel and I had been huge Star Wars fans when we were kids. Of course, you know, you see that as a small child, and it like changes your life, right? Everybody feels that way. And there is that feeling that some of these elements evoke. And I feel like no matter what, if you're familiar with it, you see the lightsaber and you're going to get that feeling. So we wanted to make sure that even though we wanted to go to new planets, see new creatures, that sort of thing, that we had some of those traditional elements that really evoked the feeling of watching Star Wars, of watching the first three. Even. Yeah.
Sure. So that in that regard, did you feel that you had enough freedom to sort of create that world around your story based on knowledge you have?
Yeah, I really did. I mean, I felt like Gabriel and I talked about this a lot, and I think that one of the major components that makes Star Wars feel like Star Wars is stuff like people having loyalty to their friends and building families out of misfits and those people going on and being the unlikely heroes. And those feelings that aren't necessarily about ships or sci-fi, but are really the human element, even if not everyone involved is a human. So we also talked a lot when we were first coming up with the pitches about how to make sure that also worked into our story, so that it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, check off a bunch of boxes, like, lightsaber, you know, these different things. But, you know, you have the lightsaber, but that's intrinsic to a story of someone who's finding her family and finding what she wants to fight for.
And this is Anya again. So she's an extraordinary strong female character. We're seeing a lot of that in Star Wars now.
Yes.
Even behind the scenes, we have a very strong female creative team at Lucasfilm. Our leads in the last two movies have been very strong representation of female heroines in the lead of these movies. Do you feel Anya helped pave the way for some of that?
Gosh, I hope so. I mean, that was important to us. And one thing I really like to put into my writing is to have women who aren't just, you know, the traditional badass women, but women who have complicated friendships and are able to fly, fly a ship, but also to have some context and actually have, make their families out of their friends and deal with real things, even if the real things are flying around in space and dealing with aliens. But if you know what I mean. So I hope that that kind of did help that. I mean, I know that she's not certainly not the first strong woman in the Star Wars universe, but I'm happy that this is sort of a renaissance of that idea.
Well, you mentioned, obviously, the first strong woman, the first lady of Star Wars is our beloved Leia. How much of Leia, bearing in mind the potential for there to be a connection here with that Solo name, how much of Leia made her way into the character of Anya as you were creating her? And did you consciously sort of try to direct your character development in that way?
We talked about Han a lot, but definitely there's a lot of Leia in there too. We wanted to sort of layer that in a way that would, those elements would emerge, but still allow her to be her own person too. So I think that there is a lot of that sort of thing, even though I bet Anya herself would deny it. She'd probably say, no, I'm my own person. Of course not. But as her creators, I think we would probably say there is.
That's superb. Can we talk a little bit about the character of Tharad? Because I know that has a significant tie to our community over at Talk Star Wars.
Oh, absolutely. I was so glad that we got to do that. That was fantastic. And one of your community did reach out to me. It's at a point when we knew that the whole thing was coming to an end. So we already knew we had a limited number of issues left, and that after that it would be completely over. There was no reprieve for our book, at least, because the books were moving to Disney, and that the whole legacy type of thing would be, we thought at the time, not even available. Of course, now it is. But he wanted to have a character that combined him and his brother, as far as her names, and just to put it in some place so that I guess that he would have a legacy as well, which I thought was such a cool thing to do. So we cast around for this, and of course everything was pretty tightly nailed down at that point. But we did, I thought it was important to do this and to have a real world connection. So we did find a place, and luckily it was a heroic person and not a villain that we had left. And we had somebody that we had to fill a role. I thought, well, this will be perfect. And then it was so wonderful because we actually got to meet him when we came over to England at one point and did a signing there. So that was very special to me. So I'm really happy that we've become friends and that we've had this connection and stayed in contact since then. Yeah. And as I understand, it's been nice for his brother as well, which I'm really happy about.
Yeah, I know that they're both, it's the gents we're talking about, Jared and Theo Peppard, and they're both huge fans. And Jared speaks so fondly of this experience and how gracious you were in accommodating his wish, really, and making it come true for him. So it's something really special to him.
I'm so happy we could make it happen. I mean, it's and also from what I hear of his brother, is so creative, and I'm hoping that maybe he'll go on and create a lot of things. And both of them so creative that they'll continue this tradition and be able to expand the universe.
it's something Star Wars does. I think it brings out the creative in most of the fans, and most of the work that comes out of that energy is incredible. I know. Since we've been doing this podcast, I've had the pleasure of dealing with plenty of people that are creating a lot of wonderful stuff, lots of wonderful photography we see in our little community over at Tall Stars. Oh, it's incredible. And, you know, when you can go out there and you can do real, serious, recognised work and it inspires people in such a way, it's a terrific thing. It's just so exciting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And actually, before we even started, Randy had said to me, yeah, you'll be surprised, Star Wars fans are so creative. And I, I hadn't been really like part of the community. I was a fan, but not in the forums or whatever. And he was so right, because Since then, people have come up and shown us cosplay and sent us photos, and it's amazing. Like the sheer amount of creativity that's been unleashed by this universe.
Yeah, the cosplay is something quite special. I was at Celebration this year in Orlando, and the cosplay really ran away with my imagination. I'd never seen anything like it, really. It was some extraordinary things. Have you ever seen your characters in cosplay form?
Yes. And we actually had a couple of people send us photos, and one fan did take it upon herself to make the whole outfit from scratch, which was really cool. I got to see some of the photos from, you know, what she started with. And I was like, really? That's going to turn into that? And then it did, which was kind of like, I was like, wow, how did she even do that?
It's so impressive, isn't it?
It is. And then I was like, oh gosh, you know, maybe we should have made this even harder, really given these people a bit of a challenge. But,
maybe you'll get another go around.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have made her human, you know, give people a real thing to shoot for, but no.
You mentioned that you were a Star Wars fan when you came to the project. Is that a lifelong thing?
Oh yeah, I mean, I saw the I was a little bitty kid when the very first one came out, and it's actually the first movie that I have a clear recollection of going to see in a theater.
Yep.
So yeah, I think that goes way back.
Yeah, that is a familiar story to people of my age. I'm 45, and that was the first thing I remember seeing in a cinema, and I don't think I'd be the same person today if I'd seen another film that day. You know, it really helped shape me as a fan of a film, and certainly as a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, at one point, Gabriel and I took a trip up to his hometown, and it was this little tiny place up in Northern California where the only movie theater was in a Quonset hut, and he showed it to me proudly as the place he saw Star Wars.
Oh, amazing. That's fantastic. Do you think you would... I mean, we spoke about the transfer of the license from Dark Horse to Marvel, and and now we're seeing a whole new crop of Marvel comic books. Have you read any of the new crop of storytelling?
Oh, yeah. I have to admit I'm way behind because I have my TBR pile is...
Yeah.
You know, it could crush me. But yes, I despite being way behind, I have, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Would you be interested in returning to Star Wars storytelling within that structure?
Yeah, maybe. I you know, never say never. I do kind of feel like we had this very unique and special thing that we were able to do. And if that's all that it ever is, I'm really happy that we are able to contribute that. And I feel like, well, we made our little dent, and there's something that was never in the universe before that's there.
Yep.
So I'm very happy with that. If something else came up, then, you know, sure. But I'm not pursuing it actively because I feel like I'm very happy with my legacy in Star Wars.
Yeah, indeed. And it's a significant one. It reminds me somewhat of Timothy Zahn and the fact that Thrawn and the Heir to the Empire, everything became sort of legends for that character. But then all of a sudden, last year, we found out that Thrawn was returning. If you could bring one of your characters into the current canon, who would you pick?
Oh, gosh.
Considering I think one would be somewhat difficult now with the way the story's sort of been retconned with The Force Awakens, Anya would probably be difficult to tackle at the moment.
Gosh, you know, it's hard to say because I feel like they're almost a cohesive unit. Like, you know, they're almost... It's sort of like Han and Chewie, like, would you bring one without the other? Could, but it would be hard. So, I don't know. I might almost say I'd try to bring in Anya and see if she couldn't just pull the others along.
That is good. We like a good loophole answer on this show. That's awesome.
Just can't choose between the creations, you know?
Yeah. Right. I know that you've got some exciting news, and I wanted to ask you what's up next for you. So where do you go from here?
Well, we do have quite the announcement that happened just this morning. Gabriel and I are teamed up on another sci-fi project, but this time it's for DC Comics. Green Lantern, Earth One. It's one of their graphic novels where they showcase a character in a different light. It's not a reboot. It's almost a reimagining. And it's the entire team from Invisible Republic, which is our image book. So it's Gabriel and I writing, just like in Legacy. And he's doing the art, just like in some of Legacy. Jordan Boyd is coloring, and Simon Boland is going to be doing the letters. So the team is back together.
So exciting. Like getting the Beatles back.
Yeah,
getting the Beatles back for another album.
And the art, I have to say, is amazing. We're starting to see colored pages coming in. Gabriel's done a lot of the work on it already, and we've seen some of the colored lettered pages, and it looks fantastic. So I hope people will really enjoy it.
And you've been working on this for a while now behind the scenes.
Yeah. This is because it's a graphic novel instead of in issues. It's on, more of a traditional publishing schedule. So we've been working on it for just about a year now, and it'll be out in early 2018.
That's so exciting. Well, congratulations. I'm so excited for you all. It's really great news.
We're very excited.
It's nice that it's so fresh as well.
Yeah. And I'm always happy to do some science fiction and get to revisit the outer reaches of the galaxy.
That's exciting.
Right up my alley.
And the exact antithesis of that, I would imagine, is this dig that you're going on. I know you mentioned it to me earlier in the week when we were putting this interview together. You're off on a dig at the end of the week.
Oh, yes, I am, actually. One of my great passions is paleontology, and I do volunteer at our local Natural History Museum. I work at the Dinosaur Institute preparing fossils. So I have been invited this year to go on a dig in Utah and actually search for the fossils and dig them up and put them in jackets and bring them back to the museum and camp in 112 degree heat for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
You had me right up until that point. You had me hooked.
That's what most people. Oh, I haven't even told you about the snakes and scorpions yet.
No, you can keep those. I think you're better suited to this project than I would be.
It's something I've always wanted to do, probably since around the time I first saw Star Wars, and having nothing to do with Star Wars exactly, except for maybe that big
crate dragon.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So this is finally my chance. So yep, that'll be my next couple of weeks.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, best of luck with that project, and very best of luck with everything moving forward with Green Lantern.
Thanks.
I'm looking forward to picking that up. And thank you again ever so much for spending the time chatting to me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. It was fun.
We hope when you've completed your real life dig, maybe you can come back and spend a bit more time with us again in the future.
I'd love to do that. Thank you.
Okay, Karina Becco, thank you ever so much for your time. Speak to
you
soon.
Have a good day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we're back. So that was my chat with Karina Becco from yesterday. She is the writer of Star Wars Legacy 2, which you can find in our Amazon store if you click through the banner at talkstarwars.co.uk/books. And I advise you to check her out. So she's got some exciting projects coming up, as you heard in that interview. You can find her on Twitter at Karina Becco and on Facebook at facebook.com/KarinaBecco. And at karinabecco.com. There will be links in the description to this episode as well to make that a lot easier for you. Right. Well, I know we've just popped back, but we're going to head off to a quick break now for a sponsorship spot. And then when we come back, we're going to take a look at this month's comic books. We'll be right back. If you'd like to support what we do here at Talk Star Wars, you can do so by becoming a TSW sponsor. For as little as £1 per month, given securely via PayPal, you'll help us keep the lights on here at Talk Star Wars. When you become a TSW sponsor, we will automatically make you a TSW VIP. As a VIP, you'll get access to an exclusive stream of content that provides you with a daily podcast called the TSW Kessel Run, membership to the TSW VIP Facebook group, priority releases of shows such as the TSW Toy Box and TSW Comics. You'll also get priority access to the TSW Feature Com series and weekly Facebook Live and AMA sessions. There are also newsletters and a monthly prize draw. Head to talkstarwars.co.uk/support and become a TSW sponsor today, and the Force will be with you always. And we're back. Again, we are back part two. This is an unusual structure for this podcast. So let's talk about this month's comic books. Not everything, of course, but we're going to be looking at the new Darth Vader run. which is kind of the reason I wanted to start doing this podcast with you, Rob, this new run of Darth Vader.
Yes.
So I've read 1 and 2, and you've just read issue 3, which has just come out. I've made some notes in here, but I think if we just had a free-form conversation about it, it's probably just going to be, we're going to cover all of these parts anyway.
Yeah, of course.
What do you think of the new Darth Vader run, mate?
I like it. Now, that's saying a lot because I loved the previous Vader run. Now, it's not set in the same time. Like, this is just after, it literally picks up right after Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, actually, it kind of
inside
in that, yeah, that last few couple scenes at the in the movie when Vader is finally gets his armor on for the first time. And so my expectations were really high, and I was satisfied reading it, which is says a lot, because so many times I'll see a title come out going, oh, I can't wait for this, and like, and then I get so ready for it, and then I'm like, well, you know, it's lunch bag letdown, they call it, you know.
Yeah.
So I really like it. Like, as an overall, yeah, I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'm liking it too. It's definitely something that I think we spoke about before we got started. I'm definitely going to stick with this one. Mm-hmm. I fell off the Screaming Citadel, and I won't be returning to that series for reasons we've decided not to discuss. But this is definitely something I'm gonna stick with, not just because. I mean, the stories, I think, in each issue are a little bit too short, or they spend a little bit too much time on stuff I'd rather they got through to get me to the next juicy morsel, right. Which is probably why it would be better to read this sort of thing in a graphic novel format rather than issue by issue, because it does leave me wanting more, which I guess is kind of the idea.
Yeah.
But I love what I really like are the new elements of canon that they're dropping in, and considering this takes place just before the end of Revenge of the Sith, it's like those elements of canon are being woven in to what we've already seen on screen.
Yes.
One of the things I like, I just wanted to point out a couple of bits. Palpatine kind of points out in the book that Kyber crystals are alive in their own kind of way, and he references the bleeding of the crystals to get the red blade, because that's kind of what the first few issues or the first couple of issues have been about, Vader seeking out a lightsaber, right? Seeking out a Jedi to get a lightsaber.
Yeah, the overall, basically the overall arc of this, it picks up right after Revenge of the Sith. Anakin is now Darth Vader, and he's in his full armor, and he's just found out about Padme, and he needs a lightsaber, and what they're doing, the rule for the Sith, apparently, you can't just go grab a lightsaber from a dead Jedi, because Lord knows at the time there's thousands of dead Jedi strewn all over the galaxy after Order 66. So you have to defeat a Jedi and then take his crystal and then bleed it. And that's now that is official. This is it. This is why the Sith have red lightsabers.
Yep.
This is what has to happen. So that's. And basically, this first three issues is what we're dealing with, and that's not giving anything away. Like, I'm not gonna get into like all the other lightsabers, this and that. Like, it's just that's what we're looking at when we're looking at this little story arc with this Vader. And it's for a Star Wars fan. That's questions we want answered, because they touched on that a bit in the Ahsoka novel.
Yes,
but again, a comic book reader is way different person from a person that's going to read the novels. Now, sometimes you get, like myself, you get people that read both, but not everybody does. So this is a nice, short, brief, entertaining, and visual way to show this is how the Sith get their lightsabers.
Yeah, and what wonderful visuals as well. Some of that stuff is very, I mean, they're not pulling any punches. That the thing where they're burning some of the lightsabers, it's kind of like a Nazi book burning. You've got those big red and black banners as well in the background there as Masamida is pouring these dead Jedi weapons into a furnace to melt them down. It's very, very Nazi Germany. It really drives that point home. I love what you said about the Ahsoka book. I love the idea that they've introduced the other side of the bleeding of a crystal earlier in canon, so in the Ahsoka novel, and how she repaired a corrupt crystal or two, crystals that were taken by an Inquisitor and corrupted, bled, and she repaired them, and that gave her her white blades. Now we're seeing our chief, our principal character in all of Star Wars, actually seeking to do the damage to a crystal, even discarding a lightsaber that he uses in a particular scene in issue 2,
yep.
discarding it when he's done with it, because that's not the blade that he deserves.
Yeah, and he didn't steal it from a Jedi. That's what you're saying, when they're getting rid of all these lightsabers, he can't use those. Well, he can. I think Star Wars is this is very typical Star Wars. When you explain something, you open up another, you dive down another rabbit hole of stuff that now you want answered. It's like, yeah. Okay, this is how the Sith get their lightsaber. Well, how do the Inquisitors get their lightsabers? Because yeah. They're not Sith. Are they just allowed to bleed any crystal? Like, they can take an old lightsaber and there's more questions to be answered later on down the line.
Yeah, like if this is the traditional way that Sith acquire or Dark Force users, if this is the way they acquire their weapons, who did Dooku's crystal belong to? Who did Sidious's crystal
exactly.
belong
more
to?
More questions, yep.
So you've got all these wonderful areas that you can explore. My biggest concern is that now that we're taking these little steps forward in canon, is that we might end up breaking canon. And the whole thing with Yoda's weapon being involved kind of breaks canon a little bit. Because there's a canon reference to him having his weapon on Dagobah in a reference book. And, you know, these things, we're being told they're canon.
Yep.
And it's supposedly there with him. So to have that on Coruscant and be part of this lightsaber burning, it's a bit of a woolly area now as to which broke canon, the reference material or the comic book.
Or did Yoda get another crystal, or you mean like it's...
Yeah, that's true. He could have... Yeah, absolutely. He could have had a couple of spare lightsabers.
Yeah. But what you intrigues me, I know we're getting off the comic a little bit. Well, imagine Dooku. Imagine if he bled his own crystal.
Yeah.
Like how... It's just mind-bending. I know he didn't defeat a Jedi to get it, but he technically turned a Jedi, so maybe he... You mean like there's a whole rabbit hole we can jump down.
Yeah, well, this is sorry to cut you off, Rob, but before I lose my train of thought, that's precisely what we've been speculating on the main show that Kylo Ren might have done, is bled his own crystal and gone too far and cracked it, and that's given him that jagged blade. Or maybe he took Luke's green-bladed crystal and bled that, a green-bladed lightsaber and bled that crystal and broke it, and that's... You know, is there all this stuff now, is it setting up that one element for the movies? Is it giving us context for that one element that we're going to see in a future movie?
Yes, and especially with if Kylo Ren is being trained by Snoke, and Snoke isn't officially a Sith, then maybe Kylo was just doing it by... He just looked it up on Wikipedia, how do you bleed a crystal, and did it wrong. That's why it's...
Sithopedia.
It's Sithopedia.
Yeah, it could be. The other interesting thing that they've introduced into canon, at least in the first two issues, is this Barrish Vow, which I've never heard of before. I don't know if it is a part of existing canon. I should perhaps look that up. That would be a good thing for me to know. But the Barrish Vow is when a Jedi refuses to act, and in this specific case, it's Vader referring to the Jedi Purge, how a Jedi won't act out because they've taken this Barrish Vow, and they're going to stay non-combative, and they're going to stay hidden. And I'm wondering now whether Obi-Wan and Yoda took the Barrish Vow when they went into hiding after the events of Revenge of the Sith, and that's why they hadn't come out in the support of the rebellion, because they've taken this vow and we're going to be non-combative. And also I wonder if Luke's taken the Barrish Vow after the fall of his school. So by the time we get to The Last Jedi, there'll be a percentage of the audience that understands why he's been in isolation, because he's taken the Barrish Vow and he's sitting things out.
Yeah, that's... Well, you know what? It might be... it's like, why didn't you do... Like, if to the viewer saying, why are they just hiding out? Why are they cowering? Maybe this is... We know in the God seat, we know they're looking after Luke and Leia. like from behind the curtain.
Indeed.
So so we know that, but maybe, I mean, if it's just basically if they throw this little vow in, it's like any of the little incidental things that the Empire does between the time of the Jedi Purge and the Battle of Yavin, let's say, like right up to New Hope, this just gives them that excuse card saying, nope, we're not getting involved. We're not getting involved. We're not getting involved. Like, just leave it alone.
It's almost something that's it's a plot element that's been introduced to shore up existing canon, but I'm convinced it's there to lay the track for these new movies.
And also, too, it gives you I don't want to say it, but a loophole.
Yeah.
It gives you a loophole to say, oh, how come there are other Jedi that we don't know about in the galaxy?
Yes.
And when they can just say, oh, I took the vow. Oh, okay. That's there you go. It's done.
Yeah. Which could explain Ezra and Kanan's destiny.
Yep. Yeah. At the end of Rebels, they might wrap it up. They're like, okay, we're taking this vow. And also, too, we're going to get a little insight. Not to give, like, in at issue 3, I know I just read it because it was hot off the press yesterday.
Yep.
But when you get to issue 3, you'll see it pays off a little bit, but not the way you're talking, but the, you know, like when Vader tries to find a Jedi to get to purge their saber.
Yeah. Is this the guy? Is this the new guy? Because I made a note in when I was reading issue 2, I made a note of the reference to this Jedi.
Yes.
Killak Infalar.
Yes.
As a Jedi's sole purpose was to fight. This concerns me a little bit because this seems to be very much out of character for Jedi to be their specific purpose. Aren't they a peaceful sect?
Yes. Again, I literally just put the issue down. When you read it, it's nothing to be concerned about. It's not like like a militant arm of the Jedi.
Right.
He's well trained, but then you're introduced to this character in issue 3 and it's not, when you read it, it's not like, oh, this changes everything for me. No. You'll be okay with it.
Good. I'll definitely have that read by the time we next record. I may even have that read by the time I eat my lunch, but it's something I haven't quite gotten around to thus far, but I was a little bit concerned that this is something that's antithetical to the concept of the Jedi, something that's more of a dark side thought process that they're specifically there to fight. But, you know, I'm willing to have an open mind and go into issue 3 clean.
If anything, I think it's just an excuse to have him. Why is he tucked away?
Yes.
I mean, it's a throwaway line to say, okay, this is why he wasn't around in this part or this last movie. It's Star Wars fans, obviously, listen, we're on a podcast strictly devoted to the comics in Star Wars canon now, and we pick apart every little minutia detail. So this is kind of, I think that's more for us saying, oh, Rob, Mark, okay, from Talk Star Wars, this is for you. This is, we know you're going to ask. So this is why we did this.
Yeah.
And we read it going, oh, thank you, Marvel.
Yeah, well, hopefully it does it seamlessly and doesn't call attention to itself, because I'm already questioning the wisdom in that character design. And if it is done to sort of set the stage, I hope that it does it organically rather than me tripping across expository dialogue that gives me an excuse for why they've chosen to do this. But yeah, I'm completely sold on this book so far. One thing I was disappointed with in issue 1 was the length of the book, or not necessarily the length of the book. I don't know if this was the same in the paperback form, but the digital form was a huge book, and I thought I was really getting value for money. And as I was reading, I'm thinking, I'm only halfway through, and then the story ended, and there was this obnoxious little light in tone cartoon, which I might have enjoyed under normal circumstances, but I thought I was going to get more Vader story. Was that in the paperback?
Yes, it was. And just not to go off topic on this comic, but they released the Droids standalone comic this month.
Yeah.
And again, that's the same thing. It's a cutesy throwaway. You can read it. It's entertaining. It's cute. It's funny. But it's, again, probably not for us. being in our mid-40s. So, but yeah, it's I understand what you're saying, because you get sometimes you'll get these. The Poe Dameron comic did the same thing. But they had a little BB-8 spinoff at the end of a few of the books. You mean it's like one of those? I have a really thick issue of Poe Dameron, and then there's a little BB-8 story tagged on the end, which isn't bad. It's they're giving you something extra, but I know what you mean when you're expecting. Oh, look at Vader issue one. This is going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like if you sit down and someone says, look, here's two hamburgers, except one's a hamburger and the other one's a drawing of a hamburger. I've already prepped myself for two hamburgers.
Exactly.
How dare you take that last one away from me? It's a little bit, I felt a bit cheated by it, but going into the second book, I realized that wasn't going to be a recurring thing. So,
right.
No harm, no foul. Now, all in, I think, how I feel about rating these things. I'm going to give it high marks. I don't really like to stack rank or point these things, but I'm going to give it high marks. It's close to 10 for me. I think between the two of them, like 8 to 9 out of 10 for both books.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And again, hard to do because when you mentioned this at the top of the program, you said we started this podcast because we're like, we want to dive into this new Vader that's coming out. Now, that's pretty high expectations, and for it to be paying off, that's what more can we ask for? Exactly. I wanted to speak a little bit the Screaming Citadel that just ended. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been reviewing when I can Darth Maul and Dr. Aphra and on for the website, and I was like, I'm just gonna hold off, I'm gonna do this big arc for the Screaming Citadel because it weaves between Dr. Aphra and Star Wars. I'm thinking, I really love the Dr. Aphra run, and I've been really liking the Star Wars run, the proper title. And I'm like, this is going to be fantastic. And my hopes were so high for it that when I read it, I was very underwhelmed. And I'm like, I'm not going to write a huge review of something I wasn't super keen on. Now, if I picked it up as a comic book reader and didn't know anything about anybody and just read it, I would have been entertained. There's nothing wrong with it. They even bounced writers and artists between Dr. Aphra and Star Wars. So you had kind of different interpretations of the characters.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you read it in a trade paperback, it will be jarring when you jump from artist to artist and writer to writer. Pick it up. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't like – there's a few things with some of the characters that just seem not Star Wars to me. So that's what I was mentioning with the Darth Vader comic. My expectations were set really high, and they didn't meet them, but they would have been hard to meet.
Yeah.
And that's if I would have just, what's this new run? Screaming Citadel. I'll read that. I'm sure I would have been impressed, but it's just one of those things where I thought it had the ingredients to be fantastic and it came out good.
Yeah.
So
there's also the element of it taking place across a number of publications as well. And sometimes it can seem like a cynical move. And sometimes that just works. The flow, I know this with some of the Marvel stories that have done the same thing where they've weaved in and out of different titles. I've just picked those titles up and read them, and it's become a part of the story wholesale. And I haven't even noticed that I'm reading a title that I've never read before, or I'm reading a character that I've never read before. The creatives are people whose work I haven't experienced. It's slotted in neatly into this huge arc. I didn't feel the Screaming Citadel did that very well. I felt that it was very much there to sort of introduce people to the other lines.
Yes.
Expose them to that.
And also, too, I think it works. It goes the other way, too, because Dr. Aphra, I had zero expectation. Like, here's the first standalone comic with comic-originated characters, and we don't have any of our touchstone main characters from the movies. So I had zero, and I was delightfully surprised. Now, if somebody's listening to me talk about Dr. Aphra and they run out and buy it, they're like, this is the best thing since Dark Knight. And then they pick it up, they might be underwhelmed. You mean, like, it's just all that, it's all expectations.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah, I think that's why we try and keep our reactions kind of tempered, don't we?
Like, yeah, of course.
You'll hear you'll hear a good thing and a bad thing from me. You'll hear the thing that I really enjoyed, and you'll hear the thing that I'm kind of questioning. And what I'm liking about this Vader run is, what I'm liking about the Darth Maul run is that it kind of, it complements what came before, it respects what came before it, and it's not afraid to introduce new elements of canon, which I find exciting and really mouthwatering to think that canon might be flowing the other way now from books and TV onto the big screen. And above all of that, it's entertaining. It's well made and it's entertaining. That's got to be a plus. And that's why I'm going to stick with this one. I'm going to get caught up with Aphra. Hopefully then I'll have 3 monthly books on the go and give us a bit more variety as we move forward with the podcast.
Well, also too, we don't mind little tidbits. Like, I don't know that character's name or this little item or this planet like that. Those can go. I don't have to read every novel before I see the movie. Like, if I can get to them, I'll get to them. But again, I mean, I got a newborn baby in the house. I can't. Reading a novel is, getting through a comic is hard enough, let alone a novel. some of these plot points, like you're saying, like in this Vader, it's like you really don't want to miss out on. You mean like how they, you mean now it's official. We know how the Sith get their sabers. Like, you don't, that's a big enough, you mean, bite of the apple where you don't want to be, it's like, oh, I want that. Like, that's, you don't want to miss out on that. Or at least you want, okay, give me the Reader's Digest version of why this happens, because I need to know this going into the next movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I hope that it's not a story element that is required reading. But I hope that I hope that if we learn something more about this or the Barish Vow in the next movie, I hope that it makes sense of what came in the comic book and they were laying track for that story element. And I hope that retrospectively, when people go back and they sort of retroactively, when they go back and they've seen the movie and they start picking up the story elements, they read it and think, this is great. This is well thought out. I never want it to seem like if you watch The Last Jedi and you learn about Kylo's lightsaber and you haven't read the books, it's going to be nonsense. I think that so far Lucasfilm and the story group, they've taken such care in moving forward incrementally so that everything makes sense and everything clicks together. You know, we're calling out a couple of possible breaks to canon in here, but there's nothing explicit. There's nothing that we say no longer works.
Right.
So they're doing a good job, and I just hope that continues. And I'm looking forward to having 3 books in my pull list, digital pull list going forward.
Okay. So now that we're, I just have a couple comments. I've read the, if we're finished up with the Vader, I just read the latest issue of Dr. Aphra.
Yes.
And it was issue number 9. Mm-hmm. Now, I might go into just a tiny bit of spoiler territory here.
Okay. Should we give a warning?
Yes.
Yeah, let's give it away. For all intents and purposes, then this episode's wrapped up. We're going to do some spoiler talk now. So if you want to stick around for that, then please make sure that you're up to speed with Dr. Aphra and at least Dr. Aphra and Darth Vader. Otherwise, check out now and we'll meet you again in a month, reconvene to talk about more of this stuff. We might even be able to dip into some Aphra, Rob, because I might have caught up by the time we record again.
Oh, I'm going to spoil it for you.
That's fine. I don't mind being spoiled. To me, it's the journey getting there, not about what the thing is when I've gotten there. So if you're checking out now, we'll see you next month. If you're going to stick around, be prepared for spoilers. Rob, take it away.
All right. This latest issue of Aphra, it picks up right after Screaming Citadel. Now, she has that crystal with the life force of a long-dead Jedi.
Oh, cool.
And that's the thing that Luke and Dr. Aphra were kind of going on about in the Screaming Citadel arc. It's one of those things, because Luke wanted to learn from this, thinking that it was an actual live Jedi, but it really wasn't. It was like almost like a holocron type thing.
I see. Okay.
Just a general paintbrush over it. So now she has this item, and she wants to auction it. And her little robots, 000 and BT, you know, they're homicidal.
Yeah,
they're bloodthirsty. she says, they're thinking, oh, she has a gathering with all these lower end of society, all the scoundrels that want to bid on this item. And they want to kill some of them. the robots, and they turn around, and then she's like, no, you can only kill them in something like self-defense, or I can't remember the exact words. And then they stroll along singing, oh, okay, don't worry, we won't do it unless this happens. And they're like, loophole, loophole, loophole. And I put that up on our VIP page, because I know most of them are caught up right up to it. But that reminded me of Corey from Tumbling Saber.
Yeah.
And I could have sworn he had a hand in writing that page.
Well, when you put the... had a tie to Corey, I was going through thinking, which one of them's going to say literally?
Basically.
Which one of them's going to credit Disney instead of Lucasfilm?
Yes, exactly. And no, it was right off the page. You see them strolling down the hallway, singing literally with musical notations in their thought bubble. Yeah. Loophole, loophole, loophole. Like, it was like, okay. So that was, I think that's more of an inside joke to the Commonwealth.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
So, but... as they strolled away, and they don't like this Dr. Aphra being all nicey nice and not wanting to kill everybody and take their money, and they get a hold of holocron, how do they call people in Star Wars? Yep. The holo projector.
Yes, yeah.
They have a discussion, and then on the last panel they reveal they're talking to Vader. So it looks like Vader's back. Because as we know, Vader, Dr. Aphra worked for Darth Vader in the original Vader run, and yep. Now we see him again. So that's where they leave us.
The big gun is back.
But this Vader is a little further on down the timeline than the Vader we're currently covering on this from the Vader issues.
Run. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is going to be interesting having two versions, because they are now 20 years apart. The two versions that are out there in the current comic book runs, the characters are 20 years separated. So,
yes.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with the characterization. If there's much in the way of disparity there, that'll be fascinating.
Yeah. So, anyway, I just put it down because it's hot off the presses. I pulled it last night, and I got to it this morning before we did the show. And I thought both that last couple pages was funny. And again, yeah,
definitely funny. Excellent review. And quite surprising to have Vader back in the Aphra
book. Well, yeah, but then again, if Corey is writing for Dr. Aphra, I'm sure that was his idea, too, to throw in Vader. Why wouldn't he?
Literally.
Literally, basically, why wouldn't he? I can see him at the writer table. Okay, we have to have loopholes in Vader.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Okay. Well, are we good to wrap up for the month?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to be back next month, and it will be, a closer look at Vader issue 3. Possibly some Maul talk, and if I can get caught up, some Dr. Aphra stuff.
Wonderful.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us again this week. I am Talk Star Wars on Twitter.
And I'm Robert at RobertMMCast on Twitter.
And we'll catch up with you next time.
Later.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Find us at StarWarsCommonwealth.com alongside
The Tumbling Saber Podcast,
The Generation X-Wing Podcast,
The TSW Roundtable,
The Skyhoppers Podcast,
and The Nerd Room Podcast.
Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world.